I believe that if Justin Fields walked into the situation that Caleb Williams is walking into his rookie year, Justin Fields would still be the Bears quarterback.
Oh.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another version of Chasing It for the 33rd team. Trey Wingo here with Chase Daniel. Chase, we're calling this our official post-draft episode, but it's not just about the draft, because we've already had some news that we need to talk about. In fact, we'll get to the draft a little bit later, but there's some things that have already happened that I think are very interesting in and around the NFL, and most of them concern the wording and phrasing of the commissioner, Roger Goodell. For those that did not hear or want more information on what he said, basically, Rodgers said during the draft two very interesting things. Number one, I don't think preseason games are necessary. I like the 20-game model. Right now, we're on a 17-game regular season, 3 preseason game, 4 if you have the Hall of Fame game. And it's a 20-game model. And he says, I think it's better for everybody if we have an 18-game regular season and 2 preseason games. In fact, he went so far as to say, Chase, I don't think preseason games are necessary at all. I would imagine someone that had the career that you had probably strongly disagrees.
Yeah, I disagree with his statement that preseason doesn't matter. Look, I was a voting rep, Trey, as you know, for the NFL Players Association for 8 years. And I've sat in those meetings. I played through 3 separate CBAs. So I've been a part of 3 CBA negotiations. I've been a part of an uncapped year as well, which was crazy in 2010. So my expertise in that is pretty high. And I say that because, first of all, you can't just like switch it to 18 games. Like this CBA, as you mentioned pre-show, it runs through 2030.
2030. Okay, so people understand. Let's just understand when Roger says I want an 18-2, this can happen at a minimum the year you can open up the CBA a year before its final season to start negotiations.
So 6 more seasons.
We're talking a minimum 5 or 6 seasons. Okay, what Roger is doing is planting a seed. He's planting the flag of the NFL owners and saying this is what we want. Now continue.
Yeah, and I think that the way he did it was so nonchalant that like it just was like, oh, just flew underneath the wind for a little bit because he went on McAfee's show.
Right.
And then because it was like in a 4-hour stream and it was like a 10-minute portion and now national media started finally picking it up. And look, I commented on one of the Instagram photos for ESPN that posted it out like, hey, like Roger thinks 18 games. That's great and all. But we talk a lot in the negotiations about player health and safety. First of all, like 18 regular season games, you're going to need 2 bye weeks. Like that is a non-negotiable for these players. You're stretching out the season a lot longer, and you run into like, how are you going to build your roster? That's the biggest thing for me preseason, especially now, Trey, with the kickoff rule changing. They're going to be the bottom really 6 to 7 people of the 53-man roster are going to strictly be special teams guys. Most of the time that can fill in an offense and defense. And they need reps in the preseason to get it. I'm sorry. I've been to 14 training camps. You cannot say, hey, we're going to scrimmage and make that a preseason game because it's not even close. You need actual real game reps to actually develop your guys and to develop your draft picks. You cannot do that in practice. And anyone that says so is lying. Like it truly is. And I know it's a money grab. I know that, you know, the NFL is king. They want more games. They want more money. But I just circle back to like how nonchalant he said it and how much attention it got from the NFLPA. Like, hold on. Like, I know you're saying this, and I know there's stuff in the current CBA that, like, media kickers, if they do go to 18 games, it's a lot more. I get that. I just think from a pure aspect and standpoint of getting your players reps and, like, developing them, and not only, you're ruining the chances, in my opinion, of those guys getting their tape out to other teams. If you only have 2 preseason games to evaluate, that's how I made a living. I was the 4-string quarterback for the Washington team in 2009. fourth string. I got to play three total quarters in four preseason games. Barely got to play, but I threw four touchdowns. And a guy by the name of Ryan Pace down there in New Orleans was able to evaluate those games and said, hey, we want you to come down here, get on active roster, come down to New Orleans, like learn behind Drew Brees and Mark Brunell. We won a Super Bowl my rookie year. And then I was able to compete for the backup job in 2010. And all my contracts that I have gotten, because I've only started five games, because none of my quarterbacks that I was backing up seemed to have gotten hurt. So I never got a real chance to play. It was my Super Bowl and playoffs in preseason. And that's how I continued like down the path of my career and getting to, you know, 14 years of my career. I always took the preseason seriously, and that was four games. And to have two games, like I get it, and that's what they want to do, but it's an interesting dynamic that he set with that like comment.
Well, he's basically saying that's what's going to happen. That's what he's saying, right? And to your point,
yeah.
There's two things that people need to understand. Roger is not a talent evaluator. Roger is not a coach. Roger is not a general manager or a scout. Roger is the front-facing face of the NFL owners. That's who he is. People have this illusion that a commissioner is a granddad figure, a caretaker of the game. It's not what it is at all. Commissioners work for the owners. They're the negotiating and public front-facing figure of the owners, and this is what he does. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I just think that, like, it's inevitable that it's going to go to 18 games. And I love the strategy that he's playing there, and I think it's awesome. And I actually like Roger. Like, obviously, I work for the league now at the NFL Network. But he's exactly what you said. He's planting the flag. Like, we were talking about 18 games two CBAs ago. And you know, the league wasn't willing to give up what the players really thought was fair. And then we reached a compromise to 17 games. And then there's even like a media kicker in the collective bargaining agreement that could possibly go up to the next one to 18 games. So it'll be interesting to see like what happens. And I just love the fact that he did it on draft weekend too. So it got a bunch of notoriety and a bunch of writers writing about it.
Absolutely. And to your point, it's not just you, right? Your former teammate with the Chargers, Austin Eckler doesn't have a career if it isn't for preseason games. Okay. Yeah. The list, Victor Cruz caught three touchdown passes in a Jets Giants preseason game, put him on the map, helped him have a really good career, won a Super Bowl. Tony Romo wouldn't have a career. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner doesn't have a career without preseason games. Yeah. James Harrison, who will, I believe, end up eventually in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, was cut five times as an undrafted free agent. He doesn't have a career and was the defensive player of the year in 2008. He doesn't have a career without preseason games. So it's really easy for Roger to say this because that's not his genre. That's not his milieu. That's not his field of expertise. What he's saying is, this is what my employers want. This is what I'm going to push across the table. But again, he's doing this 5 to 6 years ahead of the curve, basically saying, this is the one thing we will not back off from. It is the one thing that is of all the other stuff you want to talk about in the CBA, fine, this is happening. Which leads to the second part of this, which would be an 18-game season and a two-bye week thing, which is just another way for the league to dominate our attention all year long. Right? Let's be honest. Like the NBA, it was so cute. The NBA thought they had Christmas locked up until the NFL said, yeah, we'll try it. And the NFL just took a steaming dump on the NBA at Christmas and said, you are irrelevant. You are irrelevant to us, okay? Because we just squashed you like a bug. Look at all your ratings together combined for your cute little NBA Christmas package. They don't make up one of our games on Christmas. So enjoy your second tier status because we have just taken that from you. That's exactly what happened. We have just ripped that. We thought something that you thought was sacred to you, we have said, we own it, bitch. That's exactly what they've done. That's exactly what they've done. So don't kid yourself. Okay. Don't kid yourself. That's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what they're doing now, because who wouldn't want the Super Bowl and then a day to recover President's Day weekend? It's coming in 5 or 6 years. It's happening.
3-day weekend, baby. Yeah. Super. I mean, that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants the Super Bowl on a Saturday. That's never happened. And so why might as well do it on a weekend where you get a 3-day weekend.
Yes. So that was some news. And then we just got this little news. A former teammate of yours who was the first person to ever catch a touchdown pass from you, just became the highest paid tight end in the history of the NFL. Travis Kelce has agreed to a new contract extension. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So let's do Travis. It's April. Okay. We are a third of the way through the calendar year 2024. Let's look at Travis Kelce's 2024 so far. Gets into a fight with a kicker before the AFC Championship game, which motivates him against the Baltimore Ravens on the road. Wins his third Super Bowl, including back-to-back efforts, putting him and the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in a different class. Solidifies his relationship with the biggest pop star on the planet in Taylor Swift, and now becomes the highest paid tight end in the history of the NFL. I don't care what happens to any other football player for the rest of 2024. Travis Kelce has won 2024 in April. He has solidified the best 2024 in April, regardless of what happens going forward, regardless of what happens in the season. Patrick Mahomes now has Travis Kelce locked up for a few more years, making him the highest paid tight end, and they're trying for a three-peat, and he and Taylor Swift are still going strong.
This guy
has won 2024. It's over. Yeah. It's over.
And the team that he's on, they just gave three big contract extensions to Mark Donovan, Brett Veach, and Andy Reid. Andy Reid's now the highest paid head coach in the game. And oh, by the way, the Kelce brothers are having a huge day today because Jason Kelce just got a huge gig with Monday Night Countdown on ESPN as well. And they were just announced 30 minutes apart. Do I think that's a coincidence?
Nope.
Absolutely not. The Kelce brothers have had a day today, man.
When is the next taping of the New Height podcast? Doesn't it drop on Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesdays, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, today's
Monday.
It's Monday. I think this might all be correlated somehow, some way. I don't know.
They got a good PR guy, man.
That could be a little crazy. So we dropped a little bomb for you there. This will come out. This happened while we were taping this on Monday. So that sort of supersedes the other news. It looks like the Cowboys are agreeing to a deal with Ezekiel Elliott, bringing him back. The Cowboys, I'm not sure if there's a team that's had a worse offseason. I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, they go through another 12-win season, can't win a playoff game when they had the most dominant stretch at home of any team over the last year. They had the biggest point differential, biggest turnover differential, won the most consecutive home games of any team in the NFL, second most in franchise history, still can't win a playoff game. But they lost not only Dan Quinn to be the Washington head coach. They took half the defense with him to Washington, all over the place. They lose Pollard in free agency. So this is a team that's sort of desperate for something. And I thought Ezekiel played okay in New England, but Zeke coming back to Dallas is not going to be the same Zeke that we saw when he was drafted there in 2016.
No, and he's not going to be the workhorse like he was either. I just don't think he can handle it. He's getting a little bit older. You had heard this in the news that, hey, Zeke was coming back. This was happening. I'd be interested to see the contract numbers because usually when they sign and they don't put the contract numbers in, it's not really great. But look, Bingo. the Cowboys in general, the all-in comment from Jerry Jones, it could have saved that. Could have saved that because you just put this pressure on yourself to have an amazing offseason, an amazing draft, an amazing free agency period, and they just haven't had that at all. I do think their draft, like Tyler Guyton, O-tackle out of Oklahoma, that was a huge need for them. And Cooper Beebe, third-round pick, probably play guard. Like, they probably got two offensive, like, lineman starters in this draft. I love it. But you need some playmakers. Dak is like up in the air. They're like, oh, hey, we're going to re-sign Dak. We're still working on it. He's got a $60 million cap hit, and he's playing.
They basically tabled it.
They basically said contract.
Yeah, yes. We're basically saying we're just going to play it out with Dak. We're just going to play it out and see what happens.
Dude, it's just yeah.
Roll of the frickin' dice, man. So, you know, this again, the NFL is never not front and center. Okay, yeah. That's what's happening right
Always.
Now. It's never not front and center. That's the most important thing you need to understand from this. Okay, all of that being said, now we need to talk a little bit about the draft. And I want to be clear. Yeah. We're going to give our opinions about what we liked and what we didn't like, especially in the first round of the draft. Understand this. All of this really means nothing. Okay? Like, grades for drafts, they're great for clickbait. And they're great for engagement. And content farming and helping the algorithm so we can put an ad in front of you. Okay.
Content
but they mean nothing. Understand they mean nothing because none of these players have played a snap in the NFL. For any of us to sit here and say, this team drafted well because of this, it's just a speculation. Okay, it's just speculation because nobody's played a snap. I would like to remind everybody that a couple of years ago, there was a receiver named Jalen Reagor who was climbing draft boards in 2020, and he was taken ahead of Justin Jefferson. Yeah. How's that worked out? Okay,
it's just,
know that. Just know that. And Chase, before we get into anything, I want to give you some numbers, okay? One of my longtime good friends, researcher at ESPN, a guy named Paul Hembakidis, Hembo. He works mostly on First Take now and is the informational guts of that show. All the other stuff that goes around it, whenever Hembo tweets or says something, listen to it. He compiled a hit-or-miss ratio for a 20-year period in the draft, 2000 to 2019. Oh. And the hit-or-miss sort of line of demarcation was, did this first-round draft pick get a second contract with the team that drafted him, right? So that I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
I saw this tweet. Oh, it's okay? Good.
We have had 56 quarterbacks over that 20-year period, 2000 to 2019, go in the first round. 56. Less than half of them got a second round or second contract from the team that drafted him. 26 out of 30. That's a hit rate of 46%.
Wow.
We just talked about wide receivers. There were 77 wide receivers taken in the first round from 2000 to 2019. Only 21 of them got a second contract. 56 of them did not. That's a hit rate of 27%. All I'm saying is let's put this in context because everybody thinks they won the draft the weekend after the draft. Most of them will not have won the draft when it's all said and done. So this is just speculation.
Yeah.
So give me the things that you liked most about the draft.
So there's two teams that I think won the draft, and there's one player that I guess you could say that won the draft. Let's start. Actually, I love the fact that you said this, and you said the Cardinals and Monty Austinfort. Like I really do think he won the draft like Monty did. And everyone saw that viral video of him wheeling and dealing, not this draft, but like a couple years ago. And it was amazing. And then they trade back. They still get the player that they want. And they had seven selections in the first 90 picks. And if you talk to anyone who knows anything about this draft class, like I talked to Daniel Jeremiah, Move the Sticks, because we worked together at NFL Network. He said, hey, like the first 70 guys of this draft, 80 guys of this draft, like I really feel strongly about, and then the rest are the rest. Cardinals selected seven in the first 90. So if DJ is saying that 80 guys are there, like I love the fact that they did this. And like you get Marvin, you got to get a guy that's Marvin Harrison Jr. To me, a generational type guy. He was my number one receiver, closely behind Malik Nabers, who we'll talk about in a little bit. Like I think he automatically transforms what's going on. Like you saw the behind the scenes footage of Kyler Murray watching the draft and being like, yeah, let's go. Like, yes, I would be. He is the automatic number one there because the other guys they have, they're great. Not even close to him. Expect a huge year out of him. And then I gotta brag on my guy, Darius Robinson. They got him at the end of the first round from Mizzou. He's 295 pounds. He fits in a 3-4 or a 4-3. He is the heaviest edge rusher of the class, so they can put him inside over a tackle. They can put him outside at a 9 technique. Like, truly, truly a great teammate, a great dude. Looks like they're drafting for culture there. I love this pick for them. And you go out and you get Max Melton, the cornerback from Rutgers, 4.39 speed. Awesome pick. Then you turn around and get Trey Benson, who some had as the number one running back in the class. He also ran a 4.39. You get Isaiah Adams. You get Elijah Jones. And then you get, Trey, somebody by the name of Tip Reiman, who doesn't believe in birds, mind you. Yeah. However, I don't know how you don't believe in birds because I see birds flying out of my window.
I don't know how you function right as a human being and not believe in birds, but that's
he said something about pigeons and doesn't believe in. But so like I just love the pick purely based on that. However, he's actually a very formidable tight end blocker wise. So I do think like Monty Austinfort and the Cardinals for sure are my first team who won the draft this year, no doubt about it.
Yeah,
and then the second team, people are going to be, you're a homer, Chase. Oh, my God. Listen, I only played for the Chargers for 2 years. They needed a change at coach, and they got that change in Jim Harbaugh. And Jim Harbaugh's stamp is all over the Chargers draft. You talk about a guy like Joe Alt, Like, Joe Alt, to me, like, far and above, and you talk to the people who do this for a living, scout, like, actually scouting, he is that guy. His dad played in the NFL. His brother plays in the NHL. Like, he's a pedigree type guy. No nonsense type guy. He's going to move over to right tackle. You got Rashawn Slater at left. You got Joe Alt at right. And you got Justin Herbert as the quarterback. And oh, yes, they also drafted a receiver because they needed a receiver. Ladd McConkey, 4.3 speed. The dude is a perfect slot receiver, but can also go outside. That's what they valued about them, knowing all these guys that they were going to draft. They value that he can play both. Look, they have Josh Palmer, they have Quentin Johnson, and some other guys. I do think by the middle of the season, Ladd McConkey becomes that true number one receiver. Like, I loved Ladd. All the film about him, I think he's great. I think he can do everything for him. And then you go and get Harbaugh own, Junior Colson. Like, dude is an absolute beast from Michigan. Like, I just think that they drafted three potential defensive starters. And oh, by the way, guess who else they drafted, Trey? Jerry Rice's son, Brendan Rice. Yeah. Like he's like it just is like
it's the all pedigree.
Really good draft. It's the all pedigree draft, but you can just sort of feel what Jim Harbaugh has his hands on. And that is like we are morphing into a run first team. Like I had a bet. This is funny. Because I did the post-game show on NFL Network for Total Access with Maurice Jones-Drew. And Maurice Jones-Drew straight up told me, he was like, I do not believe that Justin Herbert will throw for 4,000 yards. And I said, are you kidding me? Put your money where your mouth is. He is so – and so we have a very large bet, and I feel really good about it. And but 4,000 yard seasons, you have to throw for over 235 yards. He said, Chase, I'm telling you, the way Jim Harbaugh is drafting, they are going to pound the football. Said, yeah, but you still have Justin Herbert. So that's something to watch for the whole season. So I just love the Chargers draft and the Cardinals draft, like all the way about it.
Well, to that point about the Chargers, you know, some people said, hey, why didn't you get some weapons when you didn't have so many weapons leave? He goes, we believe offensive linemen are weapons. That's what Jim Harbaugh said.
So they're tips of the spear is what he said. They're the tips of the spear. I'm like, dude, that is awesome.
It is true. People always, and I'll say this, I've said it before, you've heard me say it, but people always don't think about an offensive line until you don't have one. Okay, realize you don't need it. So let's talk about a couple other teams that I thought did really well. I want to start with Chicago. Now, obviously, they were loaded, right?
But love it.
Caleb Williams is walking... I have no idea what Caleb Williams is going to be. I say that. I hope he's generational because he would be the first generational quarterback for the Bears since Sid Luckman. So I'm hoping that he's the generational quarterback. But understand this. He's walking into a perfect situation. Okay? And people are like, what are you talking about? The Bears are terrible. Okay? You have, as a rookie quarterback, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, and DeAndre Swift as your weapons on offense. That is great. That's not good. That is great. Okay.
Oh yeah. Great.
And then you also have a defense that, for the first 2 years Justin Fields was there, was terrible, and they finally turned the corner and done really well. I believe that if Justin Fields walked into the situation that Caleb Williams is walking into his rookie year, Justin Fields would still be the Bears quarterback.
Oh.
That's how good I think this situation is, and where you go matters. Just ask. For example, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes would have been great anywhere. But the fact that he walked into Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, like, don't kid yourself, okay? That helped his development exponentially. Caleb Williams is walking into a situation where he has plenty of wide receivers, plenty of weapons, and a defense that has vastly improved over the last two seasons. So if Justin Fields walked into this offensive room with that defense, he's not a Pittsburgh Steeler right now.
I agree. I sort of agree with you 100%. 100%.
And then there's two teams that always seem to win the draft. And they're the teams that are perpetually in the playoffs and the Super Bowls. That would be the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's start with the Chiefs. First of all, I don't know why, but somehow Buffalo was convinced to trade in the first round again with the Kansas City Chiefs. Last time they traded with the Kansas City Chiefs in the first round was in 2017, when the Chiefs were able to move up from 27 to 10 to get Bills killer Patrick Mahomes at quarterback.
Oh, okay? There we go.
So right away,
everyone killer.
Right away to me, I would say, not doing that again. We are not going down that road. So who did the Chiefs trade with to move up in the first round to take the fastest wide receiver in this draft? The Buffalo Bills, who, by the way, are a wide receiver needy team. And they may not have liked the player in Xavier Worthy. I get that. He ran the fastest 40 in the history of the NFL. Now, you may be saying to yourself, Trey, why are you crowing about the fastest 40 time? Because you went through the list of all these fastest 40 times and Xavier Worthy was on there. And not many of those guys had really big careers. Because Worthy is not just a speed guy. And you, right now, Chase, need to tell people why Xavier Worthy is just not a speed guy.
Yeah, look, I've had a lot of conversations, and we share the same agent, me and Xavier Worthy, and my guy was saying how he met with multiple different teams, and all of them said, yeah, his speed's great, his receiver tape is better. Not the speed cannot get you drafted in the first round. I'm sorry. The tape has to be good and expect him to be back there on returns as well. And so they really have like Tyreek Hill type plans for him. And also just imagine, because I know for a fact, I know some people that have told me Andy Reid is already dreaming up ways to short motion, the short out motion that Miami does, speed jet sweep motions. That is going to be the guy. They love his hands. They love the tape, everything about him. I don't know how in the world the speed guy fell to Kansas City at like the end of the draft, like end of the first round. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for me.
Because the Bills said, here, take our pick. That's why.
And then the 49ers did it later in the draft.
Yes.
The nemesis. Yes. Like, what are you doing? Like, you can't beat them. Why are you trading with them?
They traded with them. And the second round, they get Kingsley Suamataya, who a lot of people thought is one of the best offensive linemen in this draft out of BYU. 6'4", 326 pounds. So the Chiefs basically drafted, I think, the guy that's eventually going to replace Juwan Taylor when his contract is up, in Kingsley Suamataya. And now a wide receiver room that was bereft of playmakers or quality playmakers you could count on last year and speed suddenly has Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy. And oh, by the way, if he's available to them because of legal situations, Rashee Rice. Suddenly what was a huge weakness for the Kansas City Chiefs now becomes a position of strength for the back-to-back Super Bowl champs. The other team that I thought did really well was the team that does really well every year, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. Howie Roseman made eight trades in this draft, and he ends up gets the top two cornerbacks in the draft, right? He gets the top two cornerbacks in the draft, and it's remarkable. And they have basically Darius Slay's replacement with the kid out of Toledo they took in the first round.
Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, it's interesting because this is my first year of coverage for draft stuff, but being around all the NFL Network people, they have so many research, they have so many scouts, and every single person in the know said that absolutely the Philadelphia Eagles, with getting Quinyon Mitchell and somehow getting Cooper DeJean outside of the first round, like, they are the two best corners. So you have a guy in a corner. Corners can play for a long time, man. Like, they can play and just sit there and just play it. With Vic Fangio, he plays a lot of two-high coverage. Like, these guys are going to be absolute units for this Vic Fangio defense.
Yeah. And listen, obviously it kind of all fell apart last year for Philadelphia down the stretch, but I still think Howie does an amazing job in getting players that he thinks can contribute.
He's a magician, man.
He really is. Brett Veach, and to me, Brett Veach and Howie Roseman are better at this than almost anybody out there right now. Really, almost better than anybody.
I agree.
All right, we got a couple things to wrap up here. First of all, do you think there's a player specifically that won the draft?
Yeah. I think this is crazy. I don't think I know. Daniel Jones from the New York Giants, he won the draft. And you know why he won the draft, Trey? Because, one, the Giants didn't take a quarterback. So, first of all, you still got a job. Okay, yeah. Drew Lock. Hey, just so you know, Drew Lock's my guy. He's coming for it. Like, you falter a little bit. Like New York is going to be calling for Drew Lock when you give him that type of money and the incentives package. So that's the reason. But also, he got probably the best weapon in this draft in Malik Nabers when you watch him 4.3 speed. Like, probably of all the receivers, the best well-rounded guy of the draft. Can play inside, can play outside, speed guy, inside post routes, his inside slot. Like, he is a true separator. truly reminds me a lot of Ja'Marr Chase. And then you also go out and get a little bit of tight end insurance, okay, from not Andrew Phillips, Theo Johnson out of Penn State, yep, just in case Darren Waller retires. So I love that for the draft. I think the Giants had a really good draft too. Like you look at Tyler Newbin, who a lot of people, the safety out of Minnesota, was probably the top safety. Like, you get two day one, maybe three day one starters in that draft. Like, it was a good draft.
Yeah, it really was. And so Daniel Jones won the draft. And let's finish this off here, Chase. You have now put together, based on draft and offseason, the top five offenses that you see in football right now. And you would not tell me this list before we recorded, because you wanted me to be surprised, because I think we're going to have some surprises here. So let's go backwards five to one. Who do you think is the fifth best offense?
So including draft and everything, and it's the way too early list, but I love it, it's the Detroit Lions. Like, anytime you have Ben Johnson calling your plays, like, you are going to be a top flight offense. The way he mixes play action pass with all the pre-snap motions, the shifts, and then, oh, you get Amon-Ra St. Brown, who just got signed to one of the largest contracts in the history of the receiver game. And then you have Jared Goff, who is also, if you watch the draft, which I'm sure everyone watching the show probably watched the draft because we're a football show, and you saw Amon-Ra St. Brown go up there and be like, Jared Goff, Jared, and the crowd went crazy. Like, I'm really looking forward to seeing what type of contract he signs. But man, they got the pieces there, and then it just seems like a really fun place to be. You saw them all on day three of the draft. The war room all had Dan Campbell jerseys on. Yeah. Like, I see John Dorsey in the background. Like Brad Holmes is just like a master. They signed, you know, Penei Sewell to like the largest like he had a day and a half out there at the draft. So five is Detroit.
All right, who's number four?
Four, the Houston Texans, dude. Like, I really think that they could have been higher on my list, but I like C.J. Stroud, like what they're able to do. Like, Tank Dell, obviously, like, hope he gets better. Got shot in a nightclub in Florida accidentally. Like, that's crazy. But all the weapons they have there, all the coaching they have, and just imagining Houston and C.J. Stroud in another year of that offense, like, it's magical. So I really think they're four. Top three were hard for me, because you could technically put them in any order, but I went number three, the San Francisco 49ers. The draft pick that they have, Ricky Purcell out of Florida, is like the perfect San Francisco 49er guy. You still have Brandon Ayuk on your roster, which I don't know if he's going to be there the season, because he wants a new deal. I don't know if they're willing to pay him with salaries at $30 million for receivers. It's crazy. You have Debo Samuel. You have Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle. Like, I could go on and on. And, oh, by the way, you know, Brock Purdy, top three, four quarterback in the NFL for me. So I love them at three.
By the way, yeah, talking about how crazy the draft is, of all the quarterbacks taken in the 2022 draft, all of them, first round through the seventh round, the only quarterback still on the team that drafted him, Brock Purdy.
Oh,
Mr. Everyone else is somewhere else. Everyone else is somewhere else. Think about that for a second. All right, so give me. We got two left, right?
That was three. Yep. So number two, Miami. Mike McDaniel, yeah. Frank Smith, the offensive coordinator there. Tua, Tyreek, Watt. I mean, like, come on. Like, Raheem. Yeah. I was with Raheem Mostert, actually, the running back who just signed another deal. He's like older, like my age, like good golfer. Like, we played golf with each other in the Bahamas at an NFLPA thing, and he was at the broadcast boot camp, and he was just talking. He was like, dude, I'm telling you, like, this offense is going to be another level next year, because we're going to be able to run and throw. We're going to learn from our mistake. He was very, very excited about, like, what the crew was doing, how they were getting better in the offseason. And I thought that was just, like, some good inside information that I was like, man, this is really cool. I'm sure everyone's saying that, but they got all the weapons, like, no doubt about it. And then I'll let you guess, Trey, because you love the guy. The KC Chiefs. Let's go. I could sit here and talk all day about why I think the Kansas City Chiefs are best offense. Guess what? They have one guy. His name is Patrick Mahomes. So that's the list. Yeah. That's it. Again, that's all you need to know.
I completely agree. And, you know, people do not understand, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, but at the end of the day, here is what I think. By the way, no, we should point out no Eagles in this top five, no Ravens, no Bills. So
Ravens were tied with Detroit for me. That's actually okay. Who I had. And yeah. Then our producer, Jenko, said, hey, what about Detroit? Because, you know, he likes Detroit. And I was like, actually, Detroit, I think, is better than the Ravens. Yeah. Bills, I mean, when you trade away your guy. And then, look, I love what the Bills did. They got Keon Coleman. He ran a 4.64, dude. I don't know.
And here's why I have to agree with you on Mahomes. He won it all with less this past year.
He's got more now. And he's got more.
And he's got the motivation. Look,
I love it.
Teddy Bruschi summed it up best. I worked with him forever, good friend of mine. He was trying to compare Tom Brady's start with the Patriots to Patrick Mahomes' start. And he said, with all due respect to Tom, who turned out to be one of the arguably the greatest quarterback of all time and accomplished all this, he wasn't that when he started. Okay, no. Those first couple of Super Bowls, we carried Tom to the Super Bowl with us. Patrick Mahomes carried the team with him to those first few seasons. Okay, 2018's first year as a starter, 50 touchdown passes. 2019, injured, still comes back, takes them to the playoffs and wins the Super Bowl. The team didn't carry him. He carried the team.
There you go. I have a question for you because I agree with all you're saying. And I think it's like his start of the career is much better, like just purely ring-wise, talent-wise. Over-under is set at 6 for Super Bowls for Patrick Mahomes before he retires. What are you doing?
Historically, I'm going to take the under.
Historically, he could be one of the best in history, though.
I think if he gets 5, I'll put him ahead of Brady because I'm not a ring counter. Yeah. I'm not a ring counter. Yeah. Like Patrick Mahomes,
wins on a quarterback stat.
Thank you. Patrick Mahomes can do things that Tom Brady cannot.
Yeah. I think I'd go under, I'll go under too. But the fact that we both had to like semi think about it tells you all you need to know.
Well,
about
if he gets one this year, that's 4 before 30.
3 in a row.
And 3 in a row, which has never been done. Never been done. So just something to think about. Damn, the NFL never really does have an off season, does it?
No, never. No.
Hey, how was Stagecoach? I saw the picture with you and Post Malone.
Yeah, dude, Post was great, man. Like such a nice dude. We were in the pit with Morgan Wallen. It was next level of sitting next to Johnny Football, Mark Sanchez, like Ernest, the country singer was there. Ashley Cook was there. Post did like a little private concert. And, you know, what's crazy? So he's a 2013 graduate out of Grapevine High School in Texas.
Right outside
of Dallas. I grew up in Southlake. Yeah. We were rival high schools. So the second he saw me, he was like, Southlake sucks. And so like he knew. He used to work at the Chicken Express off Kimball in Southlake. Literally, my parents' house is 3 minutes away from that Chicken Express, which we've been to multiple times. Like he is such a nice human being, but like he put on a show. Like him and like I know you're probably not in the know of like the country music scene because it's gotten like more. It's gotten, because I'm really not even, but it's gotten more popish and rockish, and that's great. But him, Post Malone, and Morgan Wallen, for the first time ever, played a new single that's yet to be released. And so it was like, as you know, Stagecoach is like the, you know, big time mountain of country music. So for them to play it there for the first time, and I got to see it. I mean, we were like 10 rows back in the pit, like my wife and I, like it was a fun time to be able to see it. But yeah, just a nice dude, honestly.
Yeah, who thought we'd be talking about a chicken restaurant somewhere between Southlake and Grapevine? Oh, by the way, for those not in the know, Grapevine is essentially where DFW Airport is. Like That's exactly where it is. So when you say you're flying into Dallas or Fort Worth, you're flying into Grapevine.
You're flying into Grapevine.
And on that geographical note, it is time to wrap up this edition of Chasing It. My man, we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, sounds good, man.